Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, March 14th, or Pi Day, if you're into that sort of thing. And I think we are on this show, so we're going to probably have a slice of pie today and talk about that. Our 800 number, 1-800-524-3604. You can drop us an email. Send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists, let's meet them. Mac Guru, Joel Brovelite. Good day, Joel.
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on if you're in Rapid City or in Sioux Falls, it's both, actually. Lemonly's John T. Myers with us today. Hey, John.
Hey, Kent. How you doing?
I am well, sir. And I take it you guys were in capable hands last show when I was out covering wrestling.
Yeah, Keeley's great. You better watch out. She's going to find for your job.
She's going to steal my seat. I think there's going to be plenty more opportunities for Keeley to sit in for me for the next year. And I certainly want to thank her for a job well done. I didn't get to listen to the whole show last time, but I did catch part of it. And also from Peer, Jeff Litterick is here. He's a technology integration specialist and keeping the lid on things during the legislative session up there. Are we, Jeff?
Yep, it's actually a pretty good couple of months as we're getting delayed with XP coming off support and a whole bunch of other technical hurdles besides the session going on, though. So
yeah, I think we're going to talk about XP on this show. I have a feeling that it's top of mind for a lot of people. So the legislature wraps up. I know the House is in recess until about 4 o'clock, and the Joint Appropriations Committee is meeting as we speak. I know that because I was just listening to the live stream. And so they're going to, you know, they're taking predictions on when they're going to gavel out tonight, but it's going to probably be a late one. Things appear to be going well in Pierre right now. So a reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, we normally put those out on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. That'd be a great place to go. I did put a link out there, guys, somebody purported that they had a list of 314 videos related to Pi on a YouTube playlist, and then you get to the article and says, no, really, I can only find a couple, but you know it would take me way too long to find 314 videos. But if you're into mathematics and eating pie, and who isn't, you're probably pretty excited about today. Also, Albert Einstein's birthday. So, but who knew? That it's all of that wrapped into one. Jeff, did you want to kick off Pi Day festivities today? What's your favorite thing to do on Pi Day?
Well, one thing we probably should mention, the pi we're actually talking about is a mathematical formula that most people learn in school, and that is the circumference of a circle is the ratio is 3.14, and then you can take that out forever on digits. And being at 3.14, since it's March, third month, and the 14th day, it's considered Pi Day, though the ultimate Pi Day was probably in the year 1592 when you actually can keep expanding out the 3.141592 number. So it's become a big deal over the past few years for science, and they actually even had a little contest and stuff where I saw one picture on CNN where people were dressing up as Albert Einstein and at a science fair. And they were given a little kind of fashion show and contest. So too big that I've heard in South Dakota, though. So.
Yeah, but it's risen to the – this has been going on for some time, but it's the note that I saw on the Internet was, wow, finally we hit the year when it was just more than the really select group of geeks that really celebrated. It's starting to get some national attention, and it got that report on CNN. So, there must be a couple of geeks or nerds working at CNN that tipped him off to that.
And I think it being Albert Einstein's birthday actually adds a lot to the flavor of Pi Day because, you know, he is, if you're into science, you know who he is, and he's probably one of your favorites. So.
And my favorite flavor of Pi Day is blueberry, by the way, but that's just me. Was it Spock or Kirk that confounded the computer on Star Trek to overload it so they could take back control of the computer, asking it to compute out the whatever position of pi or whatever? Wasn't that a Star Trek episode?
I think it was, yeah.
I don't know. John T. or Joel, you got anything to add to the pi discussion?
Just blueberries, also my favorite, and I definitely like pie better than pie, but I'll let you sort out which is which.
I'm yeah. a pumpkin. I'm a pumpkin guy, and at my wedding, Paige and I, my wife, on October, we actually like pie so much. We actually had pie instead of cake because it was an October wedding, and it just seemed appropriate. So we had pumpkin pie and apple pie, a mixed berry. So I love pie, but yeah, usually with an E at the end.
Absolutely. Hey, so last show, did you guys talk about XP? There was a question from Ivor on Facebook. Did you guys nail that one down? I'm taking that as a no, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to ask it. Ivor asked us, hey, guys, we have Windows XP on our desktop and would still use it occasionally. With Microsoft terminating support for XP, what are some options if we want to continue to use this machine? I am not really eager to spend a lot of money on a legacy machine, but I'm not ready to replace the desktop either. Jeff, well, I guess we'll start with you.
What's going to happen here in April, the second Tuesday of April, I forget the exact day, is Microsoft is going to release its last set of supported security patches for XP. The machine doesn't break at that point, but at that point you now become insecure, and everyone realizes there's a whole bunch of hackers out there waiting for 0 days just for the next day because they know Microsoft will never fix those again. So to use that machine on the internet or on networks it's be very, very risky, especially as you go on. If you keep it standalone, there's very little risk unless you bring up a USB key or something like that into it. But if it's part of a network, you're really going to want to mitigate that somehow. Either don't let it on the internet, don't let people use it to surf the internet, or upgrade it to either Windows 7 or 8, or change it to a Macintosh or a Linux computer or something else that is still supported and still getting security patches.
Hmm. Now, the older machines, they'll run 7 or 8 fairly well, right? I mean, especially 8 is a...
Well, remember, XP goes all the way back to 2001, so depending on the age of the machine, if your machine is was purchased, you know, around the time of 2007, 2006, you're probably okay. If it's before that, you probably don't have enough RAM to really run Windows 7. You do want 2 gigabytes minimum of RAM, and it's probably more a memory issue than a CPU issue.
Okay.
But like I said, you could run Linux and other flavors of stuff that are still supported on the same hardware.
And it's pretty easy to check that out and see if you like Linux, because you can boot off of the DVD or the CD that you're going to install with, right? And
right.
play with it, and that was the biggest thing for me, was getting past the point of you don't have to have the thing installed on the computer, on the hard drive. You can just run it off of the CD or DVD if you want to, and check it out and check out the features and see if it all works for you. So,
yeah.
Interestingly enough,
the important thing is just don't leave it on networks and have internet access to it. Probably that first day in April is not going to kill you, but soon afterwards there will be exploits, and people will be looking to hack XP machines knowing that they will no longer get security patches ever again. So it's a ticking time bomb at that time, and probably sooner rather than later is something bad will happen.
You might have mentioned this, but do we know how many XP machines are out there in the wild yet that people are using daily?
It's actually been, at least on the internet, with people surfing from them, there's people who do stats, and the machine numbers are still out there, but they're falling pretty quickly. So actually it may be less than 2% by the time we actually get to this deadline. So it's dropping, seems to be dropping every day. So.
Oh, wow. I expected that number to be much larger than that.
Well, you got to remember, a large people surfing now are actually on smartphones and other stuff. Desktops are only about 50% of the total now, so that actually, you know, mitigates those percentages pretty fast too. So,
okay, we have a comment, I guess, from a listener. Douglas says he's been putting together a couple of CDs with freeware on them, and while looking at SourceForge, he found a portable apps program. It installs and then will connect with the internet and gives you a choice of programs to put on its index system. He says there's a lot of other options. There's a bunch of options of business, science, utilities, browsers, etc. He found about 27 that he really liked and downloaded those. He says the result is kind of awesome. He detests the use of the word, but it works. Anybody familiar with portableapps.com? I'm just going to throw that out there because it's a comment from a listener, and we'll pass that along to everybody else in the audience. If he finds it interesting, chances are somebody out in the audience finds it interesting too.
Yeah, but, I'll investigate that one. That's new to me.
Okay. Well, hey, we'll check that out and throw that up on Facebook if we find that to be as awesome as as Douglas does. And I'm sorry to use that word again, but I had to throw that out there. So we have a lot of other things we want to talk about on the show today. One of which is the NSA sort of bag of tricks as far as hacking and spying and other things is sort of coming to light. I think we're going to talk about that in the next segment of the show, though. We should take a quick break and thank our sponsors and take a breath. And when we come back, we're going to talk about things such as captive audience and Gumfist and what you can do at home to sort of mitigate the impact of those on you. And welcome back to this Pi Day edition of Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've got John T. Meyer from Lemonly with us today on the phone. We have Joel Brovelite, our Mac resident guru, and Jeff Litterick, our... I could go on for days. You're our gaming expert and networking and security and other things, but you're with us from Peer today, and we appreciate your time as well. If you have questions or comments for any of the guys on the panel, there is an 800 number you can call, 800-524-3604, the number. You can send us a tweet if you'd like, at SDPB. We'll get it in front of us. And the email address that most people like to use, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. John, let's do a Lemonly update before we do anything else. Any cool infographics we should know about? Did you put out a St. Patrick's Day infographics recently?
We did just yesterday. We threw out a. I'll put it up on the Facebook page. It's a flow chart that says, "So you want to drink on St. Patrick's Day? So you want to drink like you're Irish?" And it actually is a flow chart that takes you through decisions like, "What time of the day is it? What mood are you in? Are you trying to be like a leprechaun? So it takes you through like, should I be drinking a Guinness or Bailey's or black and tan. So if you're getting ready for the festivities this weekend or on Monday, I'll check out the Tech Radio Facebook page and we'll have a chart that'll help you decide what you should be drinking.
Awesome. Hey, we have seen some interesting things come to light in recent days as far as the bag of tricks that the NSA has to monitor and some spy on or whatever internet traffic and in particular being able to get into your computer, turn the microphone on, watch the webcam, do things like that. And this is really nothing new. They've been doing this for at least 10 years. And there are other people doing it as well. So cyber criminals, there are now there's a new term that's been coined. It's called sextortionists. So you can put those two things together, monitoring your webcam and obviously using things that they see on that to extort money or whatever out of people. Obviously, the law enforcement uses. We've seen school districts suspend students based on what they surreptitiously see on the cameras and listen on the microphones of the devices that get sent home with students. So there are. I guess there are reasons for people to be aware that this thing right in front of me on my laptop here with the camera and the little microphone that's right next to it, I should be able to turn those on and off, and I should think that they are on or off, but they can be overridden. Jeff, you're smiling.
I actually did this in almost year 2001. We did this in-house as kind of a practice after one of our security trainings to each other with cameras and stuff. And also, one thing I want to warn out is a lot of people depend on that little light on your camera showing when it's on and off.
Yep.
That can also be overridden. That's not a good indication. And over the years, there's been a lot of examples, especially more on the personal level where a lot of people put their computers in the bedroom, especially teenagers and stuff. Well, that camera shows the whole room 24x7, anything you do in the room can be recorded and has been by hackers for just for fun. I mean, up on the internet, there are bulletin boards that show pictures of this stuff, of what they found interesting as they came across and hacked computers. Most of the botnet software out there will override and capture video and microphone if the hacker so desires. So,
and if you want to, if you think you're muting your microphone and your little taskbar thing is going to take care of it, it's not.
Right. The software they use makes it totally hidden so that you don't realize it's on. So I actually only buy cameras at my home that have the little slide, and I actually slide when I'm not in use, the cover is slid closed. So, and I don't put the computer in my bedroom either, though I doubt anyone wants to see a picture of that of me. So
yeah. So what do you do about the microphone?
You know, there's not much you can do because most microphones are built in now. It used to be, you know, microphone in my case is built into the webcam at home, so I can unplug the webcam, the USB entirely if I want.
Mm-hmm.
But most laptops today, or smartphones or anything like that stuff, the microphone's live all the time. And there's not much you can really do to turn on and off. Just, you know, keep it away from sensitive stuff, I would guess, is about the best you can really do.
Can you take an old microphone or an old pair of headphones or something and cut the cord off? And shove that in the microphone jack.
And well, on some computers that may work hardware wise, but many of the newer computers let you choose from multiple microphones. For example, I have both a headset with a microphone and my webcam with a microphone. When I plug it in, the computer sees both, and I can actually switch between the two at will. So, as long as it's physically attached, someone can always activate any mic on the machine. So.
So that just killed the idea I had. I was thinking, oh, I'll make $1 million. I'll create this USB thing I can plug into a laptop, and then I can just, you know, go to a little software interface and say, black this out, black this out, black this out. What you're saying is they'll be able to go in and turn that off just as well as I can turn it on.
Yeah, they can see all your microphones, and they just turn them all on and listen to them all.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, rats. Maybe I'll get back at them and I don't know, play
probably
some
the most important thing is to
on.
Be very security conscious. If your machine is acting weird, check it out, make sure it's clean. That's probably the best defense entirely. So,
and for webcams that don't have the little slider on them, you know, people use sticky notes, or they'll use a piece of duct tape, or they'll I've even seen now they're actually marketing stickers for sticking over webcams, so like little skull and crossbones or little whatever. Different companies are doing advertisements. There you go, John, a Lemonly sticker for everybody's webcam on their laptops. I see by your reaction you're not keen on that.
Well, I don't worry about that stuff as much. And I know that, like, Jeff and I are, like, opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to, you know, even we've had this discussion on the show before, like, getting on Wi-Fi networks at coffee shops. And, you know, I think if Jeff is A, then I am Z when it comes to those things, probably. So,
all right. Well, question from Jim on our last topic. Let's go ahead and take that. Windows XP and antivirus malware programs. Won't antivirus and other software like Norton protect an XP computer after Microsoft stops supporting XP? So I think Jim's question, let me reinterpret that a little bit. Sorry, Jim. So your antivirus program is going to continue to update for XP, and your malware stuff, is that going to be good enough to keep your machine up and running the way it should be, Jeff?
Maybe for a short time, many of the antivirus stuff, even like Google Chrome and the browsers, will start now discontinuing XP2. And I know there's a couple antivirus people that will not last more than a year before they discontinue XP support on their product line, at which time you truly have no protection. So it's better to be planning to get rid of that stuff. And many of the exploits today's, there's no antivirus program that picks them all up, and many on the 0 days can get in and disable the antivirus. We've seen this happen many times, so it's a layer of defense, but a good patch machine is still needed to be a really tight defense. So you won't be as protected, and as support wanes off, you'll be even less and less supported. So it's best. XP's running today. It's just like Windows 98 did in the past. It's time to move on and move on to newer stuff.
Joel?
Yeah, you know, one thing I'd say is, you know, if you really want to protect yourself from, you know, A, B, C, whatever it is, your best bet is to make sure you're using the latest security definitions, the latest hardware, the latest software, the latest operating system, they're going to be the best protected and the most defined towards what's out there. If you're fearful of viruses and intrusions onto your privacy, a good way to make sure that happens is to use something really old, like Windows XP, or to get on the internet at all. So if you really are conscious about that and that's something you worry about, doing anything with old software or old hardware is not your best plan. So you should always keep updated with hardware and software if you want to be safe. That's what I would have to say about that.
Absolutely. Donna writes about, she's asking about old laptops. How do you dispose of old, well, unused old laptops is basically what she's saying, not old unused ones, but old laptops.
You know, probably the first thing to know about with disposing of an old laptop is if you're truly going to dispose of it and not, you know, necessarily make money from it, first you want to do is take care of the data that's on there. And the best way to do that is to just get the hard drive out and physically destroy it. That probably is your safest method. And if you can't do that, you can take it to a computer shop, basically any computer shop or any smart kid down the block. They'll be able to pop that hard drive out and physically hand it to you. And then basically physically destroy that drive somehow.
And then recreate a scene from Office Space with a
baseball bat or videotape
hammer.
It and then post it on YouTube. So that way you can get some recognition. And then after that, again, if you don't want to make money for it, you can contact the manufacturers if it's a major manufacturer like Dell or Apple, somebody that still makes laptops. They're basically required to recycle that for you. So you can. That's the easy method. You might have to send it to them. But that's probably your safest and easiest. There are some other websites that will take things as for recycle. There are organizations like the Boy Scouts that might take them and reuse them. But I would say probably your best method, if it's a major manufacturer, is to go right back to the manufacturer because they're required to recycle that stuff.
Okay. Is there a market for this kind of stuff on like eBay or on Craigslist, or should she try that first?
Well, there's a huge market for it if you want to make money from it. There are lots of companies that will buy hardware. Of course, the older it is, the less it's worth. You can sell stuff on Craigslist. You can sell stuff on eBay, different websites. But, of course, that's a lot less safe, and very few people are going to want to buy a hard drive or a laptop without a hard drive. And that is the safest way of protecting your data that's on that hard drive. Even things like passwords and things that you typed may be recoverable off the hard drive. So depending on how important safety is for you.
Mm-hmm.
I like your idea, Joel, about, you know, if you can clearly wipe the data and keep that clean and still keep the computer intact. I mean, I think schools, maybe churches, nonprofits would still definitely not only want but use this technology, so it'd be great to donate. And maybe even some places where you can write it off.
Yeah, and but you want to be careful that you're not donating something that's actually going to be trouble for them. If you donate a computer that's too old, you know, that's not very helpful. Then they have to figure out a use for it or a way to recycle it. So you're going to want to definitely check that out first. But clearly donating is a great idea, and but make sure that your data's safe. And if you're going to keep the hard drive in there, you know, take somebody who really knows or do your research.
And I commend you for having laptops old enough that still operate. They're just unused because everything in my house ends up getting either broke or ends up getting hardware problems. The thing doesn't run or, you know, shuts down all the time or whatever. Usually it's a, you know, a defective kind of a thing. But, yeah, so obviously she wants to recycle the thing, do the right thing and keep it out of the landfill, all the stuff that shouldn't be in there. So so good job and good luck, Donna. We wish you well on that. Try selling it first, and if you can't, it's time to find a recycler and get that done. A reminder, if you like a list of the links we talk on today's show about, they are on Facebook at facebook.com/techradio. It's your chance to call for help. Our 800 number, 1-800-524-3604 is the number today. You can send us a tweet. At SDPB is where you would point that. And our email address, midday@sdpb.org, which seems to be the popular thing today. It's easy to open up your email program and slide us off an email. Midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org is the way to do that. I want to spend some time talking today about the South by Southwest Festival going on. Is it a festival, John, or is it a interactive symposium, or what is this thing become?
It's a zoo is what it is, really. and unfortunately, you know, that took a tough turn 2 days ago if you heard about the incident down in Austin with a drunk driver late at night, and some people were injured and a few deaths even, which is very tragic. But as far as what it is, you know, it started originally as a music festival, and then a film festival was added, and then I believe in the early to mid-90s they added interactive and tech, and it's become a big platform for, you know, for launches. People say Twitter really became what it is today at South by Southwest, and Foursquare went head-to-head against Gowalla to be the location app of choice at a South by Southwest and really kind of won the battle. So it's always who's going to be the app of South by Southwest this year. But it's almost, it's really tipped the scales. Now it's just so much noise that it's really hard to even stand out. That being said, it's a great gathering in an awesome city with awesome barbecue and Tex-Mex and some live music and a lot of great discussions. This is my fifth time going to South by Southwest. And this year I actually got to speak. I was a part of a new part that was added this year called South by Sports. So there was a new section, had speakers like Bill Simmons from Grantland and Nate Silver, who's launching the 538 blog, originally New York Times political blog. Jurgen Klinsmann, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team. I spoke about, my talk was called Sports Don't Look the Same Anymore. And it was about visuals and things like infographics and how there's so much data about sports now today, but how infographics and data viz can make a better understanding of that. So it was a great time.
Is that did you get a big audience, a big response for that?
Yeah, I was pleased. I had a room of probably about 60 people of like 60 spots, 60 chairs, and there was maybe 70 people there. There was some standing room only at the back, and I felt good. South by Southwest is a place, cause, I mean, there are 30, 40 things to do at every hour, sessions to go to. So you can, you know, people will sometimes just get up and walk out because if they don't like it, because there's other things to see. Mm-hmm. So people weren't leaving, so I'm going to say I did okay at least. And I would say as an overall theme, this year, you know, last year was a lot about 3D printing. This year, a lot of talk about wearable tech, which, you know, we've talked about on this show. So wearable technology year. Your Fitbits, your Fuel Bands, your tracking devices, your everything about that. So a lot of talk on wearables.
Okay, and so the general thing is there's a concentrated audience there, and if your app is going to make it anywhere, it's gonna make it there first. What you're saying.
Arguably, your loudest early adopters, the people with big followings, the people who have audiences. So, yeah, you want to hopefully, ideally, make a decent little splash there. Or, you know, for me, it's a great way to, you know, being here in Sioux Falls, we do business with people all across America, but it's a good way to kind of see a lot of people in one place. It's just a lot of density.
Did you see anything there that kind of made you go, wow, or?
Let me think. I'm trying to.
Probably a couple of things, but.
You know, this isn't that new of technology, but in the trade show, I saw 3M had a booth with Post-its, and they're doing really cool things. You think, you know, paper Post-its isn't that cool, but, you know, they've teamed up with Evernote, and they're now able to read your notes if you scan them with, like, the Evernote app based on the color of the paper. So it'll actually filter your notes. So if this is a Lemonly project and this is a to-do list at home, you can scan the paper, and it'll read that, but also organize it based on the color, which I thought was pretty cool.
All right. Hey, let's pause the South by Southwest discussion for a second. We got a couple of phone calls coming in. We want to take care of those first and foremost. Dwayne from Sioux Falls, second time caller in the last couple of weeks. You called a couple of weeks ago. You wanted to give us an update, Dwayne?
Yeah, what I had was the problem I had was hard drive went out of the computer, and so I got a new hard drive, and I went to install the disks as far as putting it back to factory specs, which it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And I remember I called you guys about it, and you gave me some tips and things, and I thought maybe there are others that might run across this. What the problem was, the hard drives changed about 2011, and they went to what they call an advanced format. You guys probably know this. Before that, the old hard drives were like 512 bytes per sector, and the new hard drives today that you buy are 4,096 per sector. So when you try and install the disks that came with your computer, if your computer predates about 2011, you'll find that it tries to install it, but it can't because it formats the hard drive to that 512 bytes instead of what's now the 4,000 or something. So what I did, and one of you guys had mentioned it, was just got a Windows 7 put in it as a clean install, and wham, bam, it works. So it's the, and it, by the way, you know it's advanced formatted hard drive. They all are today, and it'll say a little sticker on it. It will say AF. And if you have a computer older than about 2011, you might run across this if you have to reinstall your system with a new hard drive. So just wanted to add to it. I know one of the guys said, if it's time to get it fixed, let me know. And
sure.
I appreciate your help at the time.
Well, yeah, I remember that call. It was actually about a month ago, I think.
I think it was.
Yeah. So, but you got her up and running, and that's a helpful piece of information for people to know. You need to really specifically match up that hard drive and make sure it's the right one, or it's just not going to format right.
Exactly. I don't know if I should mention about Amazon or not. Is that okay?
Yeah. What about Amazon?
You can buy a Windows 7 in there for $100.
Okay. So
the reason for it, so it's for like a computer. If you're building your own computer.
Oh, the sure. The what do they call that? The white.
Yeah, OEM.
Oh yeah, the OEM is now white box or OEM. Yep. Great. Well, thanks for the call, Dwayne. We appreciate the update, and congratulations on getting everything back up and running. I think we lost Dwayne, but congrats on that, Dwayne. While we got Amazon up, did any of you guys want to talk about the price change for Google or for Amazon Prime? Actually, everybody thought it was going to go way up, and it didn't quite go up as far as everybody thought it would. Nobody wants to talk about that? Okay. Well, it's going
to... I'm trying to remember what it was. I heard speculation, but I couldn't remember. So it's up to $99 now, I believe.
Yeah, it's going to go to $99, and everybody was thinking the price point was going to be at least $120.
Yeah, and so it was $79, I know.
Yeah, yep.
I think I might renew it in December, so I'm in for a little while locking at that $79 price. But yeah, so 25% increase looks like. And like you said, originally there was rumors of 40 to 50%, so... If you're a student, if you're listening to the student, you have a .edu email address. I should have done this because I actually still have the college email. You can actually pay $49 for an Amazon Prime membership.
So. Right, half off. What a great deal, because you're gonna save a lot of money, and you can potentially get rid of some other video services and use theirs to boot. So, Jeff, you have something?
Yeah, I think if you're
well,
buying...
I'm not sure if it was mentioned, but... There's also a lot of websites popping up on ways to get around that price increase, at least for the next year, for current subscribers and stuff. So there are some ways to game the system, at least for one more year. So,
okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I cut you off, John.
Oh, no. I was just, I guess I'll make a little pitch as a subscriber of Amazon Prime. I mean, if you're buying something there, once a month and once every other month, you'll pretty quickly, because not only do you get the discount on the price, but then the free shipping, and then, as you said, the video service, which I actually don't take advantage of enough, but the value does add up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I yeah, we're not going to go on with an advertisement for Amazon Prime, but there have been people that have tried to write blog articles about what the replacement for that is, and they can't come up with one. You know, what the better solution is. You know, they can't put any pieces together that fit together any better than that, and you know, cheaper or more reasonable or do a better job. So it's something to look into. And the price, like we said, didn't go up quite as high as a lot of the people thought it was going to. And hey, they added something for the kids, and who doesn't love that? So that's fantastic. We had another caller on the line, but we didn't get a chance to get to them before they hung up. Apologize about that. If you want to call back, please do. But I know he had an XP question and things to, I guess, to watch out for. I guess was in my prompt, Jeff. If we have people that want to extend the life of their XP machine, at what point do they know after this cutoff date that they really need to move on? Loaded question, I know.
Yeah, I know. If it's not on a network or anything, you could keep running it forever if you don't have it plugged in or don't do dial-up or anything like that. And there's 98 machines still running out there like that.
Oh, here's a little clarification on the question. He had heard that a lot of ATM machines or the automatic tellers or the cash machines run on XP.
Well, they run XP embedded. And while it's XP, Microsoft has seen fit to extend support for XP embedded for a little longer. And those ATM machines hopefully are on private networks, not connected to the internet, and there's gatekeepers kind of monitoring the traffic in and out. But yes, that is true. Almost all ATMs are still XP, but they're running what's called XP embedded, which is a stripped down version of XP that's more secure anyway, because all the file sharing and all that kind of stuff is not even in the operating system. It doesn't exist. So, it's a very stripped-down, focused XP. So they'll be safe. Now, that support ends in, like, 2 more years. So there is a support deadline for them coming up, but Microsoft says about 2 to 3 more years for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that clears that up. XP Embedded, who knew? I didn't know that. Again, our 800 number, 1-800-524-3604, the number, at SDPB, if you'd like to tweet us, or the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio gets us in here. We do need to take another quick break. When we do come back, we will probably talk a little bit more South by Southwest and some iPhone 6 news after this. And welcome back to the final segment of Dakota Midday Tech Radio for this Friday, Pi Day, 3.14 on the calendar today. Today's panelists, again, Mac Guru Joel Brovelite is with us, Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer, and taking a break today is SDN sales engineer Amos Asap. We'll have him back next show, of course, and from Peer, Jeff Litterick, a technology integration specialist. He joins us today, and this is your chance to call for help again on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604. Have a question for one of the guys or just a comment? We'd like to talk about those on today's show. It'd be fantastic if you'd let us know. John, so I just bought an iPhone, and now the 6 is coming out. Are you telling me this?
Well, I posted that link in the chat. Of course, Apple rumors go pretty much year-round nowadays. I kind of got off cycle, too. You know, you get onto those subscriptions with your phone carrier, and then you don't want to be in the middle, because then you're that guy who, as soon as the new one comes out, you got one that's about 4 months old.
But how long can you wait? Yeah, yeah.
That's the story of an Apple product. So, you know, Joel could probably touch on, I know they seem to be on kind of the September, September-October rotation. They've almost, it's like the pressure is still mounting that they almost have to come up with a version every year, and that's usually been the trend now.
Joel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of pressure now, especially with Samsung dumping money into advertising to promote their product or products, plural, for Apple to, you know, come out with a new iPhone. You know, Samsung probably comes out with a new phone, not just a particular model, but, you know, monthly, bi-monthly, just because they sell in so many markets and they sell across so many price points. So, there's always rumors of Apple coming out with something new. We probably won't see anything until fall. Apple likes to release stuff in fall, maybe announcing it in middle summer, because they know that people tend to buy in the fall towards the Christmas season, the back to school season. That's when the profits are the best, and that's when people are most likely to buy. So that's when we're most likely to see it. And if you see any mock-ups of what an iPhone 6 might look like, that would be news even to Apple, because I would bet that Apple doesn't even know what the iPhone might look like, even the people that design it. So whatever you see is not likely what we will see maybe come fall. I would expect Apple to release other products in the interim between now and, say, July, particularly next month, as we get into either Worldwide Developers Conference, which is Apple's developer conference for people who write software, create hardware. Maybe new devices, certainly updates to some existing devices. So I don't think we'll see a new phone anytime soon. So you're safe at least right now.
I mean, Joel's right. I think the mock-ups, the leaks that you see are always wrong, but it seems usually the more volume you see of them, the closer to getting right they are. So, like, you know, the rumor is curved glass. So iPhone, I believe, acquired Apple, that allows to make this curved glass. So there's been rumors that the new iPhone will have that kind of curvature in the design. I'm also seeing a ton of kind of mock-ups or leaks about the smartwatch, like the iPhone watch, which would be competitors to, you know, Samsung's product or the Pebble watch. So that could be something, don't you think, Joel, you could maybe see here at WWDC, but possibly the watch?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder about a watch in that, you know, Samsung kind of saw the rumors going around that Apple was trying to develop a wearable device, a watch, and then they rushed to market with one, and it hasn't been very successful. And I wonder if Apple was looking at that going, well, thanks for doing our research for us. Maybe we ought not release a device that is a watch. However, if Apple does it, you can bet that it will be a lot more functional. Apple's not really into releasing something if they can't either A, dominate the market, or make one that's more usable for more people, or just kind of a no-brainer product such as the iPad or you know, a lot of people are talking about the Apple TV now gaining steam in the set-top market. So I don't know if we'll see a watch, but a wearable device, I think, is a likely release sometime this year.
Are they going to make this thing bigger? And here's the reason I say this.
No.
And you scoff at me every time I want a bigger screen, because you know, yeah, I wanted that Note. And you know I wanted the S5 that's coming out, because the screen is monstrous. But what that allows is not only do you get this great viewing experience with the screen size on this, but Samsung can stick a battery in there that is like a bigger battery than a tank. You know, yeah, Jeff's holding one up in the webcam right now. Good job, Jeff.
Yeah.
So these things go on and on and on for battery life. Is this something that Apple people are just going to have to keep retrofitting with backs and cases and things like that to extend their battery life then?
I don't know about you, John, but I have no problem with battery life. And I haven't heard of anybody complaining about battery life for an iPhone since maybe when the iPhone 3 came out. Yeah. Yeah, you're holding up a battery. I don't know, what phone do you have here?
It's the 5S. It's the 5S.
And you're having a problem with battery?
That is the one thing when I was, you know, doing my market research for these phones, and when I do market research, I talk to people. When I see them have a phone, I ask them about it. I don't care if they're
that's
a stranger,
by the way, not,
or somebody.
I just want you to know that's not market research.
Oh, what is product research? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's neither product research nor market research. That's case studies, which is
all
interesting,
right,
but doesn't necessarily tell you anything.
Well,
no, what I'd say about a larger screen, which I think there's a segment of people that want a larger screen on a phone. You've got to remember, Apple is one company, and they make a line of devices. They're not going to make a larger phone for maybe 5-7% of the market, when they can really concentrate on making a great device for more like 60% of the market. Most people aren't going to want a phone that is so big they can't fit in their pocket, at least not right now. And if you do want a better viewing device, you know, you can get a data connection on an iPad Air Mini, and you can make calls all day long on that, and it winds up being cheaper. John?
Battery-wise, I haven't had many complaints in the newer models of the iPhone, like you mentioned. One thing, I'm kind of a case, I'm not a big case guy. I kind of like just the beautiful design, which I know is really foolish. And I've had one cracked screen before, but when I travel, there's some really great products like Mophie, M-O-P-H-E-E, I believe it is, or maybe it's I-E, I'll check on that. And they make a case that's also like an additional battery. So if you charge your case, you know, I'm traveling, going out to a conference and using a lot of data, using making calls at the airport, you can, you're getting low on battery and you can turn that on, you get like a whole other cycle. I found really great luck with that, plus it doubles as a case.
Yeah, I've seen some great innovative things, and so that's one way of getting around it. And yeah, I haven't had the greatest of battery luck on this phone, and I don't know if it's just the phone or the, you know, but other people I talked to, their biggest complaint about the iPhone 5S was coming off of an Android was the battery life. And believe it or not, coming off an Android, but that was their big thing was battery life. But hey, you know, other people
yeah,
have other results.
That actually. Not that long ago, it's completely the opposite. You know, Android was not known for having good battery life. They've certainly made some strides. What I would say with battery life with an iPhone 5, well, any iPhone really, or any device, you know, make sure that you, if you're not using Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, that you have them turned off because they really do pull power. Not only is it good for your battery, but it's also good for protection against your data. You shouldn't have your Bluetooth on unless you're using it, because that's a security risk. Same thing with Wi-Fi. So make sure to turn those off. And with the iOS 7, it's easier than it ever has been. You know, to your specific problem, you know, if you're not getting an entire day plus of battery life on your device, I'd probably call Apple because, you know, I charge mine every other day, and I think I use mine so much that my wife wants to disown me most of the time. So I have no issues, and I haven't, you know, I usually try to keep tapped into news, and I haven't seen a lot of issues.
I wonder if Bluetooth isn't catching my heel on this, because I do use it quite a bit in the truck to when I'm going back and forth to different places. I'm listening to Pandora. That's Bluetooth to my sink in my truck. So I am using that quite a bit. So I'll watch that and see if I can't shut that off and get a better deal out of that. While I got you on the phone,
Bluetooth is probably the second or third most power consumptive thing on the phone itself. So yeah.
Okay. All right, that could be what's catching me. Then I'll watch for that. While I got you here, how do I fix the autocorrect issue with this? How do I override autocorrect? Because I've almost sent some really embarrassing texts to people, and I have. Is there a way to do that quick?
Fix the autocorrect?
Yeah. How do you shut off the autocorrect on texting and emails?
Well, we'll probably have to maybe post that on the Facebook. It sounds like we've got the music running up. I think the best way to fix autocorrect is to learn how to type and utilize the autocorrect. So.
No, these are words that I want to type. Well, anyway. I want to thank our panelists today, John T. Meyer, Joel Brovelite, Jeff Litterick. Thank you so much, guys. We appreciate your time. A reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, the MP3 version of the show is posted to the web soon, along with the show notes. Listen.stpb.org. If you haven't signed up for our podcasts, you should probably do that. You can podcast this show and many of the other things you hear on SDPB Radio. That's all the time we have. Stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The news is next.